Yeah, and then Aske writes something interesting. He writes if there was any requirement of reweighing in the small project. And the answer is no. The thing is, signal and background in this case does not really look alike for several reasons, some of which you could reweigh your way out of. For example, let's say that we wanted a way to find out if people are ill or not. Well, if we then say, okay, to get ill people, we will go to the hospital and get 100 random people. And to find healthy people, we'll go to the football field and find 100 random people. Then you might see that from their age profile alone, you would be able to tell if people were ill or not. Because if those on the football field is from 20 to 30, well, then just age alone would give away if they're healthy or not. But if you reweighted the data such that, for example, you took all those who were healthy and gave them a weight such that their age profile fitted that of those who were ill, now suddenly age would no longer be a way by which you could tell directly if people were ill or not. So that's what's meant by the reweighing. But the answer is, in this case, no reweighing is required. And then Sofus says, you can't get clustering to work. All right. Well, that's a good place to point. Did anybody get clustering to work? And by the way, Sofus, are you talking about the clustering in the small project or are you clustering last week's exercises? Small project. Okay. Did anybody else get the clustering to work? No. Well, that's not a no from everyone. Now, okay, yeah. Michael writes that with two components, he got around 0.9. And there's an I hope. The thing is, maybe one way to get clustering to work is to go to fewer variables. Remember, we said a maximum for how many you can use, but all right. So first you wrote you run with 2, 3, 4, and 5. Yeah, but it was the input features length I was talking about. Right, if you don't have many features, clustering sometimes is just easier. And then you can try to scale it up from there. Yeah, 10 or 3 variables. How about you know, something you can actually plot and see yourself? Okay, so that may be a piece of advice. But anyway, so if you don't hesitate in returning on the line. You know, if that makes it work for you, because then it might be a general advice to give out. And then there's a question on how do you calculate the accuracy of the clustering? And the answer is don't. You don't need to. I can tell you what we do. We will try to see if your clustering, we know that there are electrons and non-electrons in this data. Hence, somewhat the clustering should follow this pattern. It may subdivide the electrons or the non-electrons, and that's why we asked for 3 or more. But each of your clusters should predominantly have electrons or not electrons in, and we will simply take each of your clustering sort of groups and ask, are you more electron-like or less electron-like? And then divide accordingly. And that means in the end, we get something which is more electron-like and less electron-like, and then we see how electron-like. But from the unsupervised clustering, we do not evaluate much on the performance. So to some extent, if you got the clustering algorithm to work, then fine. Yes, Sophus, you're certainly required to remove the truth variable from the cluster. So that was a good move. And then while we're at it, I can say that on the small project or initial project web page, we put this solution reader up. And this is a way by which you can see if you sort of if we can read your solution. And here I can say that last year I wrote the code that read, I think it was between 7 and 9 different formats that people submitted their solution in. And that really sucked. And there was one solution I still haven't figured out how the person did it. It crashed completely when I ran on it. And then I looked at the first 1,000 solution entries and it looked perfectly fine. And I looked at the last 1,000 and looked perfectly fine. Yet, when I compared it in size, it was almost 10 times bigger than the other solutions. And as it turned out, in the middle of the whole thing, as if put together by taking two parts of a solution, but it wasn't straight in the middle. There was an insert of 10 million characters, which was a strange ASCII character from Windows for end line that it, I don't know how they got there, but certainly didn't like it. So please check that, well, please run this on it. And then back to questions. Andy asks a good question. Are we supposed to do regression on the entire data set, or should we somehow remove non-electrons first? And you should remove non-electrons first. Let me write that out. But actually, the disaster is not great if you don't, because it will do well on electrons and poorly on the others. But we only apply it to the electrons afterwards, and so your algorithm will be doing reasonably well anyhow. But yes, you should remove non-electrons because we're trying to get the energy of electrons and then get the regression going on what remains. And yeah, and then Christopher asks a good question. Namely, are you required to submit 9 algorithms, so 3 for each problem, to get the full score? And the answer is no. But perhaps at the same time, I owe you, Christopher, to say that if you, for example, submit just one score for each of the 3 problems, which is perfectly fine, then I would say they have to be quite good for you to get the full points. Right? We would love to see that you didn't miss any performance and that the optimization was fantastic and you know, the ways in which you did it were good. But note that you will have earned the 75% immediately. And so frankly, my own gut was feeling was that, well, if you try a tree-based and a neural network-based on the classification and regression and just one clustering algorithm, then I think you're far, right? You tried different technologies and the different things, and the maximum of 3 was actually set just not to get flooded with all sorts of solutions. I mean, we also had to just put an upper limit, but you don't have to reach it. Eric Emmy asks if you're supposed to remove the two truth variables, and the answer is yes, from all three problems. They do not figure in the list of variables to be used. And by the way, I can say that in the solution reader, if you do use variables you were not supposed to use, then it will tell you. So that's another good reason for using it. Yeah, and Ask is right. You do need them for labels. Sofus asks if you're allowed to submit three solutions with the same algorithm. And the answer is yes. That's perfectly fine. It's not a lot of variety, you could say, but no, that's cool enough. And so, should I take that as a hint that you got the clustering to work now, or was this just a general question? Ah, yeah, Andy's right. I should give a description file. When will that be? That will be before Wednesday morning. In fact, I'll start writing one now. I feel with you, Sofus. Once you get things to work and you want to play around, you of course also want to submit all the wonderful results you get with it. That was why we sort of put the limit at three, because we felt that we would get absolutely flooded. I would even be afraid that Absalon can't hold all the details of it. I've heard that Absalom can only hold 2.6 gigabyte per assignment, which I think those in JIF thinks is a lot. But when it's solutions to larger data sets from a lot of students who wants to submit a lot, then we might die there. That's why we put the limit at 3. I hope you can live with it. Rasmus Erzer asks, how big of an increase in accuracy do you reckon one would be able to get from hyperparameter optimization of light GBM on the classification part? All right, good that you find it sensible, Sophus. Rasmus, yes and no. You shouldn't expect miracles, which I think is what Sophus also hints to. Hyperparameter optimization doesn't give miracles. I've seen best cases where you got another 20% out of it. But otherwise, the thing is, so from 90 to 91 means that you got 10% more, you know, moving towards the absolute limit. So 20% you can get. But what happens now is that actually, in order to become a good and much used algorithm, which LightGBM and XGBoost are, they give very good starting parameters. They know what to choose for a different problem. Well, they don't know, but they know what are generally good parameters. And so they don't hit far from the good ones, and that's why you don't gain that much. I hope that answered your question, Rasmus. Well, Asker, I guess Sophus gave you some numbers. All right, since Sophus seems to have missed this thing on transformation, then others will surely also have. And let me just repeat here. Trees are generally translation invariant. They don't care if you give them numbers between 0 and 1, 0 and 1,000, 9,999 to 10,000. They don't care, they just put the cut somewhere and continue and get on with it. Which is why they are very good as off-the-shelf algorithms for general solution of problems. Why does the neural network not like that? Well, that's because if you, for example, have a variable that has a long tail out one way, then the sigmoid function doesn't really like to touch that and doesn't know how to optimize it. And also numerically, it might be hard for the algorithm to find the optimum, because no matter where it puts it, there's far outliers and numbers that are very sensitive to it. And what if things are categorical? What if things are integer? The trees don't care, the neural networks hate it. For that reason, the good thing to do is to transform your numbers. And as was written also by Christopher, the quantile transformer simply says, I don't care who you were to begin with, but I'll rank you from lowest to highest and give you a score between 0 and 1. And this means that you transform your data and then you feed it to the neural network, and then it'll give a reply. Of course, that means that when you want prediction on some new data, then you need to transform that as well first before you feed it in. But that's to be done. Yeah. Not unlike what you did with the PCA. Amy asks, you know, does it matter which one you use? Yes, it does, is the immediate answer. It really matters, because some of them will, it depends on the data as well. Some data, for example, if you move the mean to 0 and the standard deviation to 1, then that works for some problems, but for others it doesn't. And for some, the quantile transform, you probably have to try that. This data is not too bad in that sense, so both might work reasonably well. I'm not going to give that away. Maybe this is also the time to ask quite generally if there are anybody who feels that they are not going to be capable of submitting a solution, I didn't say the best solution, but a reasonable solution to the small problem set. And you don't have to raise your hands here or anything, but now is perhaps a good time to just write me a mail. You don't even have to explain why. Just say that, yeah, this is a bit tough. The code's not working for me. Okay, so if you got a quick result there, right? Christopher asks, should features and labels be transformed in the same manner? Well, I hope you don't transform the labels, because, you know, there again, 0 and 1 is just healthy to use. So only input features should be transformed. Well, no, for regression, I could see why you might want to change the label. Well, label is usually used for categorization, whereas you would say target values. And yes, you can actually transform the target value as well. For example, if you feel that the log of whatever you're doing is a better value, then predicting the log can be useful. Yeah. So the answer is no, they don't have to be at all with the same transformation. In fact, often you wouldn't do it with the same transformation. All right. Okay, it was for regression. Yeah. Yeah, and here's another thing for regression. It's the continuous variables that tend to be good, and the neural network likes continuous variables. And for that reason, it's probably not too bad for the neural network on that to begin with. Emmy asked, very importantly, should we transform the predictions back then when we submit the result? Yes, you should. I'm asking for an energy. We are asking for an energy, and we don't want log 10 of the energy or square root or some weird transformation that we don't know about back. So that would be lovely if you transformed it back. Please do so. We will continue recording, but I'm going to sit and try to write one of these description files. And also, I think, well, discussion is running well on the chat. And I hope that you're also running it in a lot of other fora, Slack and Discord and so on, discussing this problem. And you might feel, are we cheating by discussing it? What score do you get and so on? And the answer is no, you're not cheating. You should, of course, develop the code yourself, so on. But please discuss it back and forth. That's perfectly all right. That's what we believe you learn the most from. So, yeah, go ahead. By the way, just wanted to say that in case you have a question for me, don't hesitate to speak up. I'm sitting right here, but as you can see, but my eyes are in something else. So I don't see if you write questions. Just speak up.
Trolls, I have a question.
Yeah.
So about the SHAP values and or more about feature selection for the clustering algorithm, because I'm using SHAP values for the other two solutions, which works quite well for me. But as far as I see, they are not really equipped to run with a clustering algorithm. At least I haven't found anything in the documentation.
That is correct. You can't run them with clustering algorithms. So they need to be supervised.
Yeah, exactly. So now the best idea I have for the clustering is to use the same variables or features that I used for the classification.
Yeah.
Am I not seeing anything very obvious, or is that
the best possible? No. That seems reasonable. And I think for the clustering, the suggestion by Haider before was also not bad. If you do a PCA and you just sum up, you know, the direction number one, you know, who contributed to that, and then sum up for all of them, mm-hmm. then there you would also get a ranking.
Okay, yeah.
So those would be two ways of doing it. But all right. The SHAP values won't work.
Okay, thank you.
Of course.
Troels.
Hi, Sofus.
So I'm wondering, do we even use like the testing sample for anything? Because like we can use the training sample to both test and validate, right? So what do we actually use the test.h5 file for?
To submit a solution.
Oh, okay. So this is just submitting the final solution.
This is where you apply your algorithm to, because you have all the input variables and you don't know the output. And then we evaluate from that.
Okay.
This is actually very much how modern day competitions have come about, and almost every machine learning conference will have competitions, new types of problems where people submit in this way. So that's why we thought we wanted to have it here as well. And our plan is to do at least a little statistics on what worked well and how you did and so on once you've submitted it. Cool.
Troels, one question. Why did it make sense to train only on the electrons for the regression?
I was writing on three channels at the same time, so I didn't get to you yet. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Why does that make sense? That is because you only want the energy to be right for electrons. And admittedly, here comes in a little domain-specific knowledge in terms of particles, because what you often get is, for example, a peak, some sort of signal peak. And it only the width of the peak depends on how well you can determine the energy. So that's why you want to get it correctly. Now, the background, so if things are not an electron, then they don't have a specific peak. And to some extent, it doesn't really matter what you predict for those.
Okay, thanks.
So I understand your question, and also I will write it out, and it's no disaster if you train the regression on everything, because it will say, I have a hard time getting these non-electrons right, but the electrons at least I can get right. But you should train on just electrons because that's what it's meant for.
When we hand in our solutions, do we just use the regression on all samples since we don't know which one are electrons?
Yes. Yes. That is also the point I want to add. just to answer you, Sofus, directly. Yeah, it's a free throw. And yeah, it is a bit of a shot in the dark. It is meant to almost just provoke the feeling that you will have when someone hands you real data and they ask, do you see any patterns in this? And then you run a clustering algorithm on it because you don't know what it contains. And then you see patterns and you ask yourself, is this good or is this bad? And what does that relate to? And you realize that to say more, you probably need some domain knowledge. You need to know something about the data. Maybe you can figure out because it's emails. Maybe you can't because it's particle physics or worse. Yeah, it's in fact just to provoke that feeling and to let you sit and think also what is good and what is bad here and what is possible and what is not possible. So yeah, as you're asking all these questions, I see you're on the right track out into the blackness where we explore.
Hey, Troels, can I ask you a question or two?
Of course.
Mine is a simple one, and it's how well can you trust the Scikit's inbuilt classification report? Because I try to just brainlessly put the new data, like data for the simple project, into one of my earlier codes, and it gave me an accuracy of 0.88, and that seems weirdly good for just doing nothing, basically. So, is it a trustworthy classification report, or
I would say, without having tested in detail, I would say yes. But when you say doing nothing, was that not optimizing your algorithm or not running any algorithm and picking at random?
I mean, you know, I meant taking the new data and putting it into the decision tree algorithm from like the first week or something. But not giving it any, and just using whatever it chooses as default for all the hyper variables.
Okay, but then I think it's trustworthy further, because the default is not bad.
Mm.
You get most of it by just running an algorithm.
All right, I just wanted to make sure that like the thing I was looking at was actually
well. There's never any. I think the code is right. Of course, you can misinterpret things or put the wrong things in or have a bug, and well, that's life. But yeah.
All right. The next question is, I'm pretty lost in how to figure out what features to use. I tried to look at the sharp thing you linked in the project page, but I keep running into problems with being either unable to install it, or maybe installing it and then being unable to import it. So,
okay.
I'm not sure I understand like what he says. He gives like a visual that I don't know how I would use to find.
Haider just wrote, as it turns out, most algorithms have a built-in way of ranking their the input features, the variables. And many of them are built on something called permutation importance, which means that if you suddenly take one variable and put in random numbers and different ones of them, then through that it gives a ranking. And this, I would say, is reasonably good. It will not be entirely wrong. It's not the same what's done by the SHAP values, but there's no requirement to do it by the SHAP values. In fact, you could argue there's no requirement to do it at all. You would be unlucky if you chose the 30 or 15 worst variables, because then you don't get good separation. But you'd still get some, and that would be consist a valid but not good solution. So, but I would say try the internal ranking, the permutation based one. Also, just as a warning, the SHAP value calculation is slow inherently. Did that answer your question, Simon? No.
In one sense yes. Yes. In another sense, no. No. So, in a sense, yes, it did answer my question, but it didn't solve the problem, because I had tried doing using the at least the things that Scikit has default for the decision trees. But that did not give me anything. It just gave me a way of numbers that I could not interpret, or it gave me nothing. So
okay, but then Simon,
but that's just my own code.
Then in that case, you have a very specific problem, and I think you should either on Slack or Discord or privately on the chat or by email or by phone or by any mean, write it to us. Okay?
Yeah, okay.
And this is the hard part about these times and coding. I mean, we really want to help you also with code. It's hard, but we are going to try our best. So don't hesitate in sending us things that don't work. And meanwhile, both Rasmus and Heider came with at least suggestions in the chat. Cool?
Yes.
Excuse me, just a short question regarding sharp values.
Sure.
I see in the workflow that one should first to have the model and then run the sharp values. So my question is, when we are assessing the ranking and we first need to pick some features out of the more than 100 that we have, wouldn't be a useful sharp, I mean, because I checked and I need to run first a model and then after I can get the rank in sharp, but not before running the classification or neuronal network model. I'm confused about that.
Yes, very good question, Jana. Yes, you need to first run a model and then get the classification ranking or the feature of ranking and then choose from it and then do it again. And then you might say, but I run on 15 variables and you know it will rank those 15 and not the others. One solution, which is the brute force, but also the way forward, is simply to say, I first run a model with all variables in. Right? It's not what I'm allowed, but I run with everything in. And then I run SHAP on that. And it's going to be ugly and long, but at least it gives me a ranking of the variables from which I can then choose. Okay. And as it turns out, when you feed it that many variables in order to ever finish, it does need to make some assumptions and approximations. And for that reason, it's not certain that it gets the entire ranking entirely accurate to begin with. So what is sometimes a good idea is to say, all right, and then my next iteration, I'll choose, I don't know, 20 variables or 30, but you know, a low number close to what you want, and run it again.
So would be a good idea to use PCA, for example, pick 50 features and then run sharp?
That could also be a way forward to quickly get there. You know, imagine that there was not 160 variables, which is a lot, but imagine you had a million variables, right? That's perhaps overdoing it, but you know, 10,000 variables, then the PCA is at least a quick way to get at it, to get at the top ones, because in reality, it is hardly all or any, even a large fraction that contributes. Okay, good. And I mean, the extreme case is where people in genetics say, all right, we have 3 billion dimensions in this problem, 3 billion input variables, and we'll boil that down to 3, because that's what we can plot. And then you might say, that sounds a little too harsh. The answer being, yep, but it's fast, and it gives us some answers. All right. Given the lack of a lot of discussion, I thought that people can continue it on Slack, but I will stop recording at the very least here. So, but before I stop, if there are any questions or comments, then please speak up now. Otherwise, I will stop it. Nope. All right. Well, end of recording.